This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
I wouldn't do that, not for a big clock.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. We are theater geeks.
Hello, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. And we are together again here to talk today about the idea of staged readings. And before we get into that, I want to just at least make an acknowledgement here. Every episode, it seems, well, maybe not every episode, we make a plea for folks to send us ideas for topics for future episodes. And we got a number of topics from a fellow by the name of Alex Newberry.
Hi, Alex.
Thank you. A tip of the old Theater Geeks hat.
Yay.
To Alex Newberry. And he is a lighting and sound designer and founder of Royal Palm Players in Boca Grande, Florida. And John said that means largemouth.
Yeah, I just checked it. It does.
It means largemouth. Yeah. That's right. We were just sort of speculating on the quality of the bass down there, but we sort of deteriorated from there. Anyway, one of the questions that Alex gave us was to just think about what are our thoughts about staged readings. And one of the potential uses is to bring shy or less experienced players, people who might be nervous about getting on stage, I guess, fully get involved in a staged reading as kind of a way to put a toe in the water?
I think so. I mean, there's a number of different groups that use it in different ways. We have a local group that likes to use staged readings to bring new works to the community, but they use their strongest performers to do that.
They also do classics. They have like three categories.
Right.
And one of them is doing classics that, like Chekhov, that a community theater normally would not do and hope to sell tickets to.
Right.
But I think it's really interesting, you know, to look back and see those as well as the new ones.
It gives that perhaps smaller market segment a chance to at least be exposed to those works other than just reading them themselves.
Right. Or see them in a college.
And
then we have another community theater within an hour of us that does staged readings with their senior theater program. And one of the reasons why they do that is because they found that the pressure of not having to memorize an entire script
actually
is good for their senior performers, and that keeps them on stage. They get a chance to enjoy themselves and produce theater, but they don't have that worry of having only 6 weeks to memorize a full script, which can be a real freak out, you know, for anybody.
At any age. Especially when you get older and you can't remember yesterday.
Yeah, that's right.
And then we've used it in the past, as Alex is talking about. So we've used it, and we don't do stage readings here very often in our theater, but it's a
good idea, and I think we should.
And then as a class, like more like a classroom situation to get newer performers, or shy performers, like Alex has talked about, to get a chance to be on the stage and get that experience of being in front of the lights and in front of an audience. So I think it can be valid for all three of those things, and maybe other things too, you know.
Is it the sort of thing where it doesn't, I assume it doesn't require as much rehearsal, but it does require some rehearsal, right?
Not much. The group that does them locally, I think they have,
two or three
at the most.
Yeah. Okay.
Read-throughs.
It's enough to get familiar with the script and know where the jumps are.
So that you don't have
to
keep your nose in the script.
Right, and you're expected to do your homework in a staged reading still. I mean, it's not like you just want to walk into a staged reading and not have done any character work or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, usually those rehearsals are over a period of maybe 3 weeks, and each week you go home and you read, you familiarize yourself even more with the script. You try to build your character and what your relationships are, and then you bring that back to the next rehearsal.
Right. Now, does it ever make sense to? I'm thinking in terms of sort of a fun night for an audience to actually have staged readings that are sort of impromptu, bring people up to do short things.
I've never thought about that.
That would be kind of like just sort of like, you know, you put people on the spot in essence, and then just kind of have fun with it.
I wonder how many people want to be put on the spot like that, David.
I don't know. You go to audience participation
plays.
No,
I don't. I hate them.
I would love it, though.
I hate them when they come out and pick you out of the audience and make you go up and do something. I just no thank you.
See, as a kid, I was always the one. Please, teacher, please call on me. I love to read out loud in class.
Right. Yeah. Not me. Yeah. Uh-uh.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
No, yeah. And especially if somebody gets up there and it's obvious they don't read really well.
So you don't like it when the magician calls you up to saw you in half and any of that kind of stuff either.
Nope. I went to David Copperfield once, and thank God it was the person next to me that volunteered. Yeah. Whoa.
Yeah, we were in the front row for History of the the works of William Shakespeare condensed. Abridged in England, and we were in the front row, and we were like really we were picked on a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, picked on is different than dragged up on the stage and made to perform.
Oh yeah, right.
I don't mind being picked
you're
on,
buying the
as
ticket.
You all know.
You're buying the ticket. They're supposed to be performing, right?
That's exactly right. I'm supposed to be the one paying to be entertained.
All right.
I agree with John. I think it's a really, really good way to expose your audiences to different kind of different literature, possibly modern plays that you would never be able to do in a regular season because of the content, but they're still strong theatrical pieces, and it's good to get them out there. And also the classics. Mm-hmm. I mean, you might really want to read Oscar Wilde or Noel Coward rather than go, because Noel Coward, God knows, is nothing but dialogue. But to read that rather than having to memorize it while you're blocking and everything else, it might be a little bit easier. And it's fun for an audience.
Now, do you normally have someone who sort of fills in some of the
you have a narrator
okay,
that reads the stage directions,
right
in other words, scene one, a living room in the home of blah blah in Belgrave Square.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then they start.
But not every detail, but enough so the audience knows.
Not every, but like for example, if something is happening on stage that really needs the audience needs to know what's going on, but because it's a staged reading and normally they're not fully staged, so you're not seeing like people walking around on stage and lifting things then the narrator will also read that moment. So, for example, the last staged reading I did in a group was I did The Goat. A.R. Gurney, is that right? The Goat. And in that particular show, the wife gets crazy and she starts throwing stuff. Well, we couldn't throw stuff and break stuff on stage. And so the narrator read all those. She lifts a platter and throws it on the floor. She lifts a chair and tosses it across the room. Yeah, those things.
But normally, whoever's doing that reads almost like a monotone. Put any dramatic emphasis or anything. It's just
so that the audience can place
so
that
the audience
in their mind.
Knows what's happening.
Yeah, I guess if you get carried away as a narrator, it takes away from the characters.
Well, also at this one place, I have heard several narrators that would not be heard 3 feet away, which makes it very difficult for the audience to follow what's happening because you don't know where you are or what's going on,
So
the narrator is important. Reading the stage directions is as important as the characters.
Sounds like this would be a good, although not necessarily as a performance, but it would be a good technique for some play selection committees to go through just to expose actors and play and the theater itself to new works, whether there's an audience or not.
I think it's interesting because the one of my friends, well, we've spoken with Rick Ellis before here on the show,
and he's done group
and
readings
and
where they just
used
get
to
together.
Do group readings in their home. Everybody would just get together and read. And a lot of times those shows then ended up on their community theater stage. After they had read them, they went to their reading committee. The reading committee said, yeah, let's do it, and they end up on the stage.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, that is a valid way of doing that, just to get a group of people together and let's read out loud and see how it sounds.
It's also very nice because when they do it, it's like you pay $5 at the door, go in and sit wherever you want. And so it engenders a little, money for them too.
Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't necessarily recommend, if you're talking about Reader's Theater for shy newbies, Reader's Theater for people who have experience, there's a real difference there. I wouldn't throw a shy person into a Reader's Theater or for, let's say, like a Tennessee Williams.
No.
Because it would be a little bit daunting, I would think, to come up on that. So I would want to make sure that I chose the right piece.
And it depends on the person.
For the right people.
If someone's really interested in the literary aspect of a play like that, maybe they'd be okay anyway, even if they've not done something before. It kind of depends on your... You just have to know the person.
Although I will say classic literature, I mean, my goodness, why not? You know, I'm wrong there because classic...
No, I think
classic
you're right.
Is, you know,
I think you're right.
But there are some great plays, like some good comedies and things that you could do with younger audiences or mature, inexperienced readers theater that they would probably enjoy, and they wouldn't have to work so hard at necessarily the underlying emotional content and stuff. And then you can start to build that. And then you build a program, and that's when you start building the program.
But you also you probably do have to audition something like this, unless you really know the person.
They don't over there.
No,
they have a core of actors.
Well, but they know them already.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
And then they say, I'd like you to read this.
Right.
Like they know John, so they've called John and said, we'd like you to do this, and if he's available, he will, and if he's not, he won't, obviously.
Well, and
I don't think you should have to audition for stuff like this. If you're interested, you should go to whoever's in charge of the program and say, could you please put my name down because I really like a chance to do something. And then maybe you start off with a smaller role and kind of see what you can do, what you feel comfortable with, and then work your way up.
Well, and I also will say, though, that it depends on what kind of staged reading you're doing as well. So like with a community theater up in Kalamazoo, their shows are on their season. They're part of their season. And they do more staging with them. So they do audition those shows.
Oh.
So because they want to make sure that the talent is strong because they're using it as part of their, you know, of their actual season. If you're doing stage readings to kind of get new theater works out or classic works out, and it's not necessarily a huge fundraiser moment for you, you know, you're just trying to do this to increase the talent pool, increase the awareness in the community, then maybe you don't need to necessarily audition. But if it's part of your main season, you might need to audition.
Yeah, I guess I've just not ever envisioned staged readings as being part of a main season.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because by definition, you're not going to have a set, you're not going to have costumes, you know, the other things that go into making it worth $15, $20 a ticket to see the whole thing.
Yeah, but on the other hand,
other than stand there and see people read.
Right. But you're still paying the royalties on that, right?
Well, it depends.
But sometimes they're reduced too.
They have different levels.
Oh, okay.
So obviously you're not, if you're doing it once and it's like, you know, in a not-for-profit group and it's
it's
very minimal. Yeah. And if it's a classic, it's available anyway.
And if you've got the scripts, you know, but you can just do them within your own theater.
Yeah.
Right. Well, but it seems like, you know, that you could maybe construct that as a second season in essence, so that it's, you know, you can actually buy a season ticket to a separate group of these, maybe if you want, at a lower price. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if that's marketable or not.
I don't know. I think the nice thing about this is you can decide, like they start at 7:30 and you can decide at 6:30, well, yeah, I'm not sleepy yet, I'm going to go over there and rather than having to decide in advance, do you want to go and pay for a ticket and all this stuff.
Right.
You just walk in and throw your $5 down and go have a good evening or a not good evening, depending on what happens.
Sort of the coffee house atmosphere.
It is.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And nothing wrong, there's nothing wrong with that. And I think the main thing, two main things to me, which John said before, is to make people aware of shows that might not fit on your main stage season,
right,
or that are classics that you wouldn't do because they're costume heavy, set heavy, you know, and not really, today's audiences are not into that kind of thing. Or getting people that want to get their feet wet but don't want to jump into memorizing a bunch of stuff.
And that goes for the audience, though, too. I mean, if you're just talking about like a, you know, a coffee house kind of atmosphere, that might draw some people to the theater, quote-unquote, then more than, you know, having to go and sit in an audience. And yet, oh, they're interested. Suddenly, they've seen something different, and now they want to get involved, whether they're on stage reading or not.
Hopefully, that's right.
Yeah.
So.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Hey, what we thanks again to Alex Newberry for sending us this topic. It was a good one for us.
We may be using more of his topics.
We may be using more of your topics.
Keep
we love getting feedback from all of you. If you want to send us feedback and suggest topics for future episodes of Theater Geeks, please send them to either Dave, John, or Marcia at theatergeeks.com, and they will get it. The other thing I want to mention to you is that if you go to the website where the show notes for this and all the other great episodes that we've done over, we're at over 70 episodes now. So
we talked that much.
Yeah. We've talked that much. But there is an audience survey that will pop up on your screen, especially if it's the first time you come to the website. So please fill that out. Give us a little bit of information about who you are. It's all anonymous. We just need it so that we can pass it along to the folks that host our media, and we may be able to do something with some of the audience information. But again, it's not personal, so you're not identified or anything like that. Also, remember to go to our store where we have all kinds of stuff at www.theatergeeks.com/store, where we have Marcia's favorite, which is...
I'm not saying it.
The teddy bear.
Teddy bear.
The teddy bear and the coffee cup.
The teddy bear and the coffee cup.
Love the coffee cup.
Yes. And so there you go. We have those.
I have favorites too, but I won't discuss it here.
All right. Okay. just to make sure that, yes, but they are unseen.
Unseen.
Well, see, but a picture's worth a thousand words, John.
That's right.
So well, what are you saying?
And I'll be glad to hold a teddy bear and the cup of coffee.
That's right.
I, on the other hand, am not putting on the underwear. Okay.
All right. We need pictures. Need pictures. So, yeah. So, stop by the store. Remember that you can subscribe to Theater Geeks at iTunes. You can also use one of a gazillion different podcatcher apps that come for Android, iPhone, and other iOS, any other music devices. You can also listen to us directly at the website or at blueberry.com, where you can also see a whole lot of other interesting podcasts. And so please subscribe. Subscribe means that then that way it's not, doesn't cost you anything, doesn't cost nothing, and you can get every, you don't miss an episode that way. So please do that. I think that's anything else we got to wrap up here then?
I think we're done.
I think we're done.
Wow.
I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Don't say it. Say it. Whisper it.
We are Theater Geeks.
There we go.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.
Hey, this is Dave Dufour again with a special message. I'm launching a new podcast on October 4th with thriller writer Larry D. Thompson, author of the legal thrillers So Help Me God, The Trial, and Dead Peasants. It's called Thriller Thursday, and we're going to be talking to thriller writers of all kinds. Some of them may be names you know, others will be up-and-comers that you should know, especially if you're a fan of the thriller genre. We'll also be providing a bi-weekly rundown of news in the thriller sphere, new book releases, and other events. So if you enjoy curling up with a good thriller, check it out. A preview episode is already up on iTunes, so you can subscribe right now and not miss a single episode. You'll find more information at LarryDThompson.com/podcast. Don't miss it. Thriller Thursday, coming October 4th to iTunes or another podcatcher near you.